If I were a rich man, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. All day long I bidi-bidi-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a bidi-bidi-rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle-man,
Well, I don't know about you, but I think that's a very appropriate song for us to listen to on this day of day when we pay our federal taxes. Hello, friends. Welcome to In the Market. I'm your host, Janet Parshall. And let me just linger here for a bit. You used to think it was April 15th, right? Mm-hmm. Well, for some reason, today is the day until midnight. In some big cities all across the country, there'll be long lines. In fact, some of our friends down at the post office will literally be standing outside to take receipt of those papers that you spent most of the weekend working on. At least some of you spent part of the weekend working on it. Here's an interesting story. Something to consider. The wealthiest Americans pay a lot less taxes than they did a couple of decades ago, according to some people. And nearly half of U.S. households will pay absolutely no income taxes at all. The IRS tracks the tax returns with the 400 highest adjusted gross incomes each year. Bet you didn't know that. Mm-hmm, they do. The average income on those returns in 2007, the last year for IRS data, was nearly $345 million. And their average federal income tax rate was 17%. Down from 26% in 1992. Now, over that exact same period, the average federal income tax rate for all taxpayers declined to 9.3% from 9.9%. And would you like to know what the highest tax bracket is? 35%. That's one third of the old paycheck going to my town of Washington, D.C. So how can people make so much and pay so little in taxes? Well, that's because there are all kinds of breaks for people, by the way, not just at the upper levels, but at every income level. For example, GE, the corporation, the one that keeps the lights on in your house, they don't pay taxes. You might ask yourself, how does that happen? To which I respond brilliantly, I don't have a clue. Apparently there's that many holes out there. But also, many breaks, 45% of U.S. households will pay no federal income tax for 2010. In fact, this tax code collects revenue, but it also apparently offers some benefits to people out there as well. So as Tevye in the play Fiddler on the Roof sings, if I were a rich man, generally doesn't happen on this day of the year because it's the government that gets all your money. So happy tax day to you. And now on that happy note, how about we take a look at your finances? You want to talk to somebody who's really cheap? I do. They are America's cheapest family. I'm so glad that Steve and Annette Economy, they are back, raised five kids, paid off their home in 9 years on an income of just about $35,000. They pay cash. They don't use credit cards. They have all kinds of great money-saving tips. And as a result, major network television shows invite them on to come as guests. And they get emails and the phones ring. And then we're very privileged to get to visit with them as well, because then we get emails and our phone rings as well. So 1-877-LIVE-675 is our number, 1-877-548-3675. And Steve and Annette, I got a list this long of things we're going to talk about. But as I was preparing for our time together today, I thought, okay, I got to ask the economy this. How do you all work this tax business? You know what's coming. Now, you're going to tell me you're part of that 45% of the households who don't pay anything? And if that's the case, we're going to spend the entire hour learning how not to have to pay taxes.
Janet, it is so good to be back with you.
Yes,
and,
it is.
Boy, we just love talking with you, too. You know, what we do for taxes is we render to Caesar what's due Caesar, and we try to be smart about it. And for us, we've got kids that are working, so we actually prepare 1, 2, 3, our business, our personal, 2 kids, 3 kids, tax returns, and we do it with, believe it or not, we use TurboTax. And we paid a preparer 1 year and paid him a lot of money, and then the next year we did TurboTax and it did just as good. And
we have a link to TurboTax on our website at americascheapestfamily.com.
But it's a really good program, and we find it works for us.
And it's free for people that earn,
if they have the earned income credit. You got till tonight, midnight, to do it. Earned income credit gets you free TurboTax return, and if you earn under $35,000, or if you're military. So, I mean, there's some pretty sweet things
and
going on. But
TurboTax has up-to-the-moment information for what is legit to put on your taxes. So they're really, really thorough in the questions
right.
that they ask.
But this is not a commercial for TurboTax. Our thing is planning.
Right.
Be honest. Larry Burkett used to say that the area that most Christians really mess up on is being honest with their taxes. And you don't want to have the IRS coming after you. So
exactly.
do be as honest as you can.
And we even have our kids that are working part-time jobs. Our son is an ice cream scooper, and he gets tips. And we have he's into baseball, so we have a ceramic baseball jar where he puts his tips all week long. And then once a week when we do payday with the kids, he's got a sheet of paper where he records how much money and tips he made that week. He pulls out money for taxes into one of his envelopes. And then he disperses the rest into the rest of his envelope. So
then when we do his taxes, he usually has more than enough to pay his taxes, and he gets a little windfall of about $25 a year.
All right, so my question to you two, because you're all about planning and budgeting, and when the envelope is empty, that's it. Do you pre-plan what you are guessing you're going to, not guessing, because that sounds so cavalier, there's a lot of thought that goes into this, but what you are anticipating having to pay come tax day?
Yeah,
we do. And that's part of running your own business. You have to be really careful with that. In the days when we had a steady paycheck and the employer took the money out, we always had it ratcheted down so we would get the smallest refund possible, because there's no sense in lending to the government when they're not paying you any interest for the money. So we tell people to look at their deductions, look at their exemptions, and plan it. And, you know, this comes up every year, so you should be able to dial it in really carefully and make sure that you use your money wisely. If you have a budgeting system where you're saving in advance for anticipated expenses, and that's what we've done for 29 years, you will have no problem making sure that the money you don't have withheld in your paycheck is put to the best use possible.
And really, Janet, if people are getting tax returns back this year, we've got a whole lot we can say about what they might want to consider doing with that.
But in our first book, we talked about it. We talked about windfall, and that's an important topic for knowing in advance what you're going to do with that money when it comes in.
Well, let's talk about that for a few minutes when we come back. And because a lot of people are saying, well, given the fact that I had to give the government X amount of dollars this year, we're going to have to learn to live more frugally in the coming year. So this hour is going to be filled with a bunch of tips. We'll be back.
I were a wealthy man.
Helping you to be money smart, it's Hey Howard with financial teacher Howard Dayton, founder of Compass, Finances God's Way. Hey Howard, I've got more money going out than coming in, so my budget boat is sinking. Any idea where I should look for leaks?
Look at every possible way you could save money. Get rid of cable and satellite TV. Just listen to this radio station. It's free. Drop magazine subscriptions. Cancel the home phone. Just use your cell. Don't eat out as much. Learn to change your own oil. But try to make this fun by being creative. Find free entertainment. Read magazines at the library. Cook a new recipe. You know, approach cost cutting as a challenge rather than a chore. You know, anytime your income's reduced, look for ways to reduce your spending so you won't have to pile up debt to make ends meet. Want to learn more cost-saving ideas? Just visit me at heyhoward.org.
Is an appropriate topic on tax day. Now you're going to say, okay, I filled out all those forms and now I really have to learn how to stretch my dollar. Or you might be getting something back. And I'm so glad that Stephen and Ed Economy This are with us. They are America's cheapest family, loaded with all kinds of advice and tips and help so that we can look well to the ways of our household. I can't think of a better verse out of Scripture, by the way. That just is what our conversations are all about. So, Stephen and Annette, thank you for saying that in your first book you had talked about windfall. So a refund from the government, it's really getting your money back, because what it says impliedly is you sent them too much in the first place. But regardless, it's back. It's unbudgeted money where you might not have anticipated its return in the first place. So give us some guidelines on how you handle that.
Well, the first thing, you know, we go back to that planning word. And it used to be when we'd have extra money come in, whether it was from a bonus or a present or a tax refund, there would be this moment of exuberant, oh, we're so excited, you know, we're getting money back. And then the tension would be created because, obviously, in a marriage, you usually look at things from different perspectives. So Annette would have one idea of what to do with the money, and I would have another idea. And the tension of having that money in hand, it became an emotional basketball that we were throwing back and forth. And what we came to the conclusion of was a better way to deal with that would be to make plans in advance of any extra money coming in. And we just put together what we called a windfall plan with percentages. And we said, if we know exactly what it costs us to live every month, our budget is dialed in, we've done it for years, if we get extra money above and beyond what we need for our budget, here's what we're going to do with it. And it works like a dream.
And it would be things like, we're going to do a small remodeling project, like we're going to buy a gate to put in the wall of our fence so that, you know, when we trim our orchard trees, it just makes it a little bit easier to haul it to the street for big trash.
But what we did is we said, okay, this is unexpected money, so we're going to take, at the time we were paying off our house, so we took 30% of whatever came in extra, even if it was only $10. I mean, we dialed it in. And we took 30% for paying off the house, another 20 or 30% to save, and we gave a portion, too. We said, you know, this is unexpected money. God blessed us. Let's take and give 20% of it.
Mm.
And, you know, it works like that for anybody. But the cool thing is, when you have it pre-planned, it's not an emotional decision anymore.
But yeah, for the economy, the way the economy has been in America this last year, I would imagine that there's some folks out there that are looking at their tax refunds saying, you know what, we need to pay off debt, we need to take care of some medical needs like visiting the dentist, we may need to buy some clothes.
Build an emergency fund. I mean, there are a lot of things that need to be done with that money. So our best counsel is sit down right now, make a list, and then prioritize that list with what you're going to do with the money. But always remember that giving is a great way to use that unexpected money too.
Mm. That's great. Wonderful, wonderful counsel. Well, Annette, you talked about the economy this year, and it's interesting because I've been following the news that our groceries are going to start costing us more. Grain is going up. Milk is going up. Cotton, you know, if you go out to the discount store and we look for shorts and T-shirts, cotton now is going to be even more expensive. Enter your suggestion about a garden. And now we're talking to people literally all across the country, some people in urban areas, some people in rural areas. And my friends in the urban areas are going to say, well, okay, they're talking gardening. Click. This doesn't have anything to do with me. So let's surprise our friends and start by talking about gardening if you're in an urban area.
Yeah, that's a great question, because anybody can garden, even if you don't have half an acre or even a quarter of an acre, and it's called container gardening. We knew some folks up north here about a half hour from our home. They bought these containers called earth boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't even need the earth boxes. Any large container would do, and it doesn't even have to officially be a ceramic pot. It could even be a plastic container. Mm-hmm. And things like lettuce and radishes and carrots and tomatoes can all be grown right on a back patio.
The cool thing about the earth boxes, we had an elderly friend, Annette alluded to, who'd never gardened before. And she didn't know where to put a garden anyway, and she had this patio. And so she put the earth box in, and it's on wheels. It's a plastic container with a little watering system. They cost like $60. And she could wheel it around from place to place to set it up. And it worked like a charm. And then we had another person on our Facebook fan page who lives in Canada. And she starts all of her plants in the winter, and they have a long winter, you know, and she does it in a window with a grow light. And then her short gardening season is outside, but she grows stuff all year long indoors. So it can be done, and her kids love to see it. It's a science project for them, and it produces healthy organic food for the family.
All right, I'm going to ask really basic questions here, because for a whole lot of people, this is something their grandparents may have done, but it's a real frightening idea for them personally. Where are we in the growth season? Can you just trot on down to the local hardware store and buy a couple of packets of seed? Or do you have to start? You talk about the friends in Canada and growing them indoor before you take them outdoor. If you're really going to do this so that it is an economic support for your family, is it already too late this year to do this?
Okay, it depends on where you live around the country. For us here in Arizona, gardening is well underway. I mean, plants are mature at this point out here.
Wow.
And so, because we're hitting 97 degrees out here right now.
In Chicago, we heard it just snowed yesterday, so it's a little too early, or about now you start planting, growing stuff inside in the colder climates, and then transplant them outside.
So I think in most of the places around the country, things like peas, which love a little bit of frost, you can start putting them out, and you can go to your local hardware store and pick up starter plants, what they call it, so that their plants already going. But the best resource for people in their area would be to contact their county extension service, because they will know exactly what varieties of things grow, when the best time is to plant them, and how soon it will take to get what they want.
And you know, Janet, we aren't just talking about growing lettuce and tomatoes in a garden. We have fruit trees all over our property. And those actually are easier to take care of than growing lettuce and tomatoes. So if people have rooms, and you can even grow fruit trees in containers. There are citrus varieties that you can grow indoors. We like bare root trees. They only cost about $15. You can plant them in the early part of the season, growing season, and we have such good trees. They're just so wonderful.
But fruit and nut trees are awesome. They take a while to mature, but they do provide a lot of fruit, a lot of food for your property. And like Steve said, they're much less care than people would think.
Boy, that's good to hear. And you talked about fruit trees. Now, again, that presumes and waylay the stereotypes that we have in our mind here, Steve. You talked about fruit trees. That speaks space to me. Do you have to have a lot of space to do something like that?
You know, what's amazing about science is that there are hybridized versions, or dwarf versions, of just about any tree you want to buy. So we've got dwarf citrus that don't take up a lot of space. Pear and peach trees grow vertical, so they don't take up a lot of space. So you can do your research. And what's even cooler is we grow apple trees, peach trees, apricot trees in Arizona, where it's hot. But they've hybridized them so they need fewer chill hours. So learning about gardening and what works in your area is a phenomenal science project that will pay dividends for years to come.
But then, Janet, also growing the things that are native or easily produced in your area are some of the better things to do. Like for us, citrus is one of them. Pomegranate trees require almost no water. Fig, almonds, pistachios, pecans. They all grow here in Arizona really well.
And where you live, you need to have a cherry tree, Janet. I just know
I have
you
to make sure it doesn't get cut down. But
that's
yes,
right.
You're absolutely right. Well, let me take a break. And when we come back, Teresa in Florida, we're going to have you join us as well. So this is America's Cheapest Family. Steve and Annette Economy, they're just very, very practical. So with the reports that food prices are going to start climbing right through the roof, is this the year perhaps that you plant a garden and that will help you look well to the ways of your household? And we've waylaid one stereotype already, which is you don't have to be living out in the country. You can do this even if you live in the city. We're going to give you more tips when we return. 1-877-LIVE-675. By the way, we're not going to talk just gardening, but that's where we're starting on this tax day when a lot of us are thinking about money. We'll be right back.
I don't know about that, but we do have a ton of expenses.
Like what? Isn't there something here we can do without?
We can stop buying groceries, but that might be a mistake. Because eating is a habit I'd be loath to try and break. We could stop paying income tax, but they might send me to jail. And if we don't pay the mortgage, then they'll take our house. Then where would we get our mail?
Oh, yes, we are talking about money this hour with America's cheapest family. That's not a pejorative. That is a title they gladly bear. Steve and Annette Economides are with us. And if you'll go to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org, you can learn more about Steve and Annette and then click on through to their website, chock full of all kinds of great advice. We've started out after talking about tax day, which you just heard in that song as well. We're also talking about gardening as a way of trying to help your financial situation as well. And Teresa in Florida, thanks so much for joining in, and I'd like your thoughts on this topic.
Well, when I went to college, I was on a very limited budget because I was putting myself through school and working part-time, and I had to decide between books and food a lot of times. So I had a friend who told me about making an earth box for $20.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and got a small storage bin and a small crate that fit inside it upside down, and put a little hole in it with a little piece of PVC pipe and filled it up with dirt. And even if I had no porch or deck or whatever, I would put in a room that had a window that had sunlight coming in the morning. And so I would start seedlings and do the whole thing. And I ended up growing strawberries and tomatoes and peppers and all that right in my apartment. And I always had fresh vegetables and fruit by doing that way. And it doesn't take a lot of room. It just saved me a lot of money, and I had a lot of fresh vegetables that way.
And do you still garden now, Teresa?
Actually, I have. I now live in the country, so yes, I have actually raised gardening.
That's so awesome.
That's awesome. What a
creativity, living within your means, and finding joy in it. It's awesome.
Gardening really is an awesome hobby. It's therapeutic in so many ways, and you did it out of necessity, but you ended up eating well, and it didn't stress you too much to do it.
Yeah, and what a wonderful outlet, particularly as a student, to be able to say, oh, cleansing breath, and now I can talk about something else other than my math class. Well, speaking of math, my question to you is, to the skeptic out there who's listening to this conversation, they might say, really, how much of a dent is this going to make in your monthly or weekly expenses when it comes to the groceries? Talk economics to me. Is it really worth the effort here financially?
That's a good question.
You've got to weigh that. It does take a lot of time to really make a significant dent in your actually food shopping budget. But if you're a person that spends a lot of money on organics, then this is for sure a good option. We had a gal that walked up to us at one of our seminars, and she had a neurological disorder, and she was working part-time and spending $2,000 a month on organic foods. And I said to her, if your husband can pick you up on his insurance, it would be better for you to spend your time out in the sunshine, digging in the dirt, and growing your own food than spending $2,000 a month on organic foods.
But, you know, what we look at is we try and grow things that we love, number one, that are more expensive at the store. So our pomegranate tree, we still have pomegranates that we picked last year that are still good. We haven't used them yet. And learn how to store things. And so those things, they're $2 a piece. We probably pulled in $200 worth of pomegranates.
But one of the easiest things, Janet, to grow are squash and melons and cucumbers. And I remember one year we had so much zucchini. I actually made zucchini relish and canned it. And that served us well over the next year. And same with cucumbers. We had so many cucumbers that I actually made bread and butter cucumbers, and once again, we canned them in jars and had them for the next year.
So I'll tell you this, though. The trend right now is about gardening seed sales are up 35 to about 45% this year. Canning jar sales are up 45%, so people are doing it in droves. It's definitely a trend.
Yeah, in fact, what an economic indicator. Thank you for that. Teresa, thank you. We'll take a break. Be right back.
Got a bill to pay or something you need to buy, just type the check and send it off in the mail.
Well, a lot of people are hoping there'll be a check in the mail from the federal government on this tax day in the United States of America. So a perfect time to be talking to our friend Steve and Annette Economides, who are America's cheapest family. We've been talking about gardening. I don't know about you, but this has got my wheels turning. I'm thinking, you know, if you don't have to have monster acreage, this might be something we all can do. Roberta, you're in Illinois. Thanks for being a part of our conversation with the Economides. And we'd love your question, please.
My question was, I've never gardened before, but I'm kind of more interested in organic. So it's kind of interesting that you mentioned the woman that was spending, you know, like $2,000 to get organic. But I'm just wondering, if you've never gardened before, is there any information about, like, how, you know, how you would start and how you would make it, like, organic? Because I know, I'm sure there's a process for certain ground and stuff. So I'm not really sure if there's any information you have to do that type of thing.
Roberta, that is a great question. And yes, we love books. We absolutely love books. And books are a great place to start. And actually, I think gardening is one of the easiest things to read about and assimilate information. So here's a couple of books. You got a pen and paper? I'm going to give them to you. One of the books that's our favorite is called Square Foot Gardening. And it talks about doing it in a small space as well as a big space.
And the guy, Mel Bartholomew, is definitely, he teaches composting and organic gardening around the world.
Right.
He's a super likable guy, expert at what he does.
Right.
But the point is, he tells you how to prepare the soil in an organic way so that you can grow whatever you want. And then start with something simple. Start with a zucchini. That's about the easiest thing to grow out there. Squashes are simple. Lettuce is pretty good. Tomatoes can be a little tough. But work your way up and find a friend. There are a lot of resources. There's a lot of community gardens out
yes.
there. And if you join forces with somebody who's already doing it, that's probably going to be the best way to encourage you to be successful.
Many local TVs will have gardening shows. They'll be on the radio. They'll be on the TV. Just kind of look for some of those and join one of those communities, and you'll have more seeds and more friends than you know what to do with. Also, Sunset publishes gardening books. Like, we have the Western Garden book from Sunset. I think it's Sunset Magazine. And so I'm sure there's versions of that all over the country.
Now, no bad questions. So I'm going to ask because I know somebody else is thinking that as well. And Roberta, I thank you so for being a part of our discussion. When you use the word organic gardening, what do you mean by organic?
Avoiding chemicals
right.
and pesticides.
Correct.
So we don't use any of those in our garden. We compost extensively. So all of our kitchen waste goes into the compost pile. Our yard waste goes into the compost pile. And we have some of the nicest soil. You can just reach down and we put sweet potatoes in as ground cover in our front walk area. And they were beautiful. And you could reach down and pull out sweet potatoes out of the ground. It was just so soft and fluffy and amazing.
As a matter of fact, our neighbor that we share our yard wall with even contributes to our compost pile. We have a three-tiered system, one that we're adding to, one that's cooking, and one that's done. And we have a rock up on the wall. And so he knows he's supposed to dump stuff where we put the rock. And so we always, if we have a bounty in our garden, I always make sure that we share with him because he gives us his good garbage.
Oh, that's neat. His good garbage. Commonly called compost in the world of gardening, right?
Yep. Yes.
You know, I was thinking when you were talking, you realize how near and dear gardening is to the heart of God? So it's in a garden where God walks with a man. It's in a garden where Jesus prays before he steps out and conquers death. And it's a garden where we read about in the book of Revelation where that river is going to flow. So gardens work their way from Genesis to Revelation in the Bible. Yep.
And on top of that, when you put a seed in the ground and it dies and it produces more fruit, you've got the principle of multiplication, sowing and reaping. It's a great thing to do with your kids.
And Janet, one of the things I was going to say is, you know, there's a lot of families in America today that are dealing with unemployment. So I understand that whole argument of time versus money. But I would say if you're one of those families out there and somebody's unemployed, even though you're going to continue to work on getting a job, you have the time. So seize the time this year and try, make an attempt at growing things. It's the perfect time for it.
Excellent thought. Thank you for that. Becky, you're in Texas. Lots of people want to talk about gardening, and I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. Becky, thanks for joining us from Texas. Your thoughts, please.
Well, thank you. I was just going to say that when I was growing up in the 70s, we had a garden. My grandparents had a garden. and we thought it was just torture and child abuse to go out and hoe and pick squash buds, and, you know, we didn't get to go to McDonald's. But then when I grew up later on, I found out, you know, there was a recession in the 70s, but we ate awesome. And then I grew up and missed all of it, and now I have a garden.
Yay!
That's awesome.
Yeah, gardening has been in both of our families for many generations. Both of our parents, grandparents, were gardeners.
My grandfather was a farmer. Annette's grandfather lived to be 96 years old and tended his garden until he was into his 90s.
Yep. So it's in our blood, and it's just a really fun hobby and a great way to eat good food.
Yeah. Becky, thank you so. I appreciate it. Well, from Texas to Vermont, where Ingrid joins us. Ingrid, thank you. I'd love your thoughts on this, too, please.
Hi, Janet. Well, up here, we're still not planting much outside at the moment, except for peas, and I've got a little lettuce underneath some covers. I'm really living all year long from my garden, even though it's this cold. In fact, I supply a lot of the church with vegetables, too. My garden is 75 feet by 100 feet, and I work it all summer, and we have a large variety of vegetables in our freezer, and I can the tomatoes and the things that don't need a pressure canner, and the rest we freeze. And we really, truly eat a large variety of vegetables all year long just out of the garden. The only thing I have to buy in the winter is, like, lettuce and stuff like that, but everything else gets all, you know, all out of the freezer and the canned stuff.
Ingrid, that's awesome.
Do you have blueberries up where you live?
Yes.
We're moving in. That's our absolute favorite.
Well, we don't have pomegranates and persimmons or whatever, all that other stuff. We don't take that up here.
You hit on something very important.
Apples.
You hit on something very important, and that is using a freezer and storing the things. This is what we do with blueberries. When they hit their lowest price during the summer, is we buy several pounds of them, and they will last us 9, 10, 11 months. So learning how to store what you produce extends the life and extends the savings of gardening.
Yeah, we'll take those blueberries, we'll put them in the sink, fill the sink with water and just like a tablespoon of vinegar to kill bacteria. We'll wash them all, and we'll pop them into bags. You don't have to cook blueberries. You could just freeze them as is, and it's so easy to put them in zippered bags, and then we enjoy them on ice cream and in cobblers and smoothies and oatmeal the whole rest of the year.
Yes, and they're called brain food, by the way. They've done studies up in the state of Massachusetts talking about how important it is for your brain. But Ingrid said something else, and I really picked up on this, Ingrid, and you may have even said it inadvertently because it's just something you do naturally. But, you know, I always find it interesting when people are saying, oh, Lord, how can I serve you? What's a way in which I could really somehow be used in your world and in your perfect plan? How about growing a garden? Because in these economic times, she talked about providing, Ingrid did, talk about providing vegetables for the church.
Yes.
Just think of the way you could bless somebody else, even if you're thinking, well, I couldn't possibly eat all that my garden might produce. No, but I bet some other people could, and you might even have a ministry to help people who are struggling as a result of what you've done for your gardening. So it isn't just for you. It could be literally growing a way to bless somebody else in your backyard.
That's right.
Yes.
And don't forget that there are a lot of community-based ministries and needs in food banks.
Right.
So taking food that's a little more hearty that you've grown is another way to reach out and bless the community around you.
Right.
Mm. Wow. Excellent. Thank you very much, Ingrid, for being with us. I appreciate it. Judy sent a real interesting email. She said, our church sits on a lot of land, yet we are in a neighborhood. We have a sign up every year in the spring that invites people in the area to call and sign up for a plot to start a garden. We till the ground and stake it off with numbers. Some people even split that in half and share with others. It helps us minister without words and is more popular each year. We supply the water. We offer information and resources from our local extension office for growing different plants and what is best. It's a great ministry. Our church is the Wesley Free Methodist in Anderson, Indiana. Judy, thank you for sending that along. Isn't that a neat idea?
Oh my gosh.
That's what the church should be doing.
Yes, community gardens are like so much fun. I haven't been a part of that because my family's been my community, but you know, you really gain a huge knowledge from community gardens. And we saw one in Washington, D.C.
I was just going to say, we parked behind the Smithsonian, Janet. You need to check it out. The Air and Space Museum, there's a community garden right behind it. It's a little triangular plot, and it's so awesome to see.
And so we're walking through D.C. This was way back several years ago, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's a garden right here in the middle of D.C.
But I know what you didn't see, a cherry tree in that garden. Am I right?
I don't know.
We saw those all over the streets. We didn't see those in the garden.
They line the Potomac. That's exactly right. Elizabeth in Tennessee, thank you for being a part of our conversation with the Economides, and we'd love your thoughts.
Well, I was just going to call in and talk about how my four kids are wrangled into helping in our garden. And we've had a garden for about 4 years now, and they dread it, getting out in the summer, picking and bringing it in. We have to do it every day, but there is so much to teach them. And this year I had the opportunity to somehow get my 7-year-old son to go in with me and take care of we call them our babies. They're our baby seedlings. And I told him for every seedling that he would take care of for me, that I would give him $1 if it survived and I could put it in our garden. And so it's a little bit of responsibility that he's learning to take care of something like that. But he's learning so many other things, you know, incorporated with all of that.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Elizabeth, those are wonderful things. Kudos to you, yes, to teach our kids to work and to do chores, but to also reap the fruit. They may not fully appreciate it or understand it now, but I know that when they're grown, they will look back and truly understand and appreciate, just like some of these other, Becky from Texas said earlier.
Yeah, what we did is we gave our kids a little plot of their own where they could choose to plant whatever they wanted. Roy 1 year planted cauliflower, and we've got him standing next to a head of cauliflower that's like almost 6 feet wide. The thing is just enormous, and he grew it himself. And Abby loved to grow bachelor button flowers, and so the kids, when they get the opportunity, they love to take pride in it. The one thing you don't want to grow with kids around, though, is snap peas, because if you grow those, they will never make it in the house. The kids love to go out and pick them, and they never come in.
All right, good advice. Thank you, Elizabeth. Appreciate your being a part of our conversation with Stephen and Ed Economides. Let me take a break. We'll come back to the phones at 800-877-548-3675. We'll be right back.
But just remember that you got to have some income coming in before you send out all those checks in the mail.
Now every Monday morning when I get my pay, I'm feeling very rich indeed. I got a pocket full of money I can spend each day, so I can pay for all the stuff I need. I got a great start, but here's the hard part. I got to plan for every expense, 'cause every nickel counts when your entire allowance is only $7.50.
Well, there's a good reason to have a garden. It'll help on your food bill. Steve and Annette Economy, they serve with us. They are America's cheapest family. And you know, friends, we had all kinds of things that we were going to talk about, but I am so glad that so many people have questions about gardening, which is a very practical way to help stretch that family dollar, particularly when it comes to your grocery bills. Naomi, you're in Illinois. Thank you for being part of our conversation and your comment or question, please.
Yes, hi. I work in a community. I work at a school district where we have almost 80% of our kids are reduced or free lunch. So it's a very poor community. And I wanted to know if you had any suggestions on how to start a community garden. Like, where would you find the property and how would you go about getting it all started?
Oh, my gosh, that's a wonderful question. And a school district is a great place to have one. So once again, I would call your county extension service.
Most county extension services have a program called the Master Gardener Program. And what they do is they'll go through hundreds of hours of training. And one of their tasks after they've been trained is to go out into the community and assist people who want to learn to garden. So I would join forces with somebody at a county extension service and see if you can get it that way. Or I would look for a 4-H group that was willing to come in and help you start. But I guarantee you there's going to be somebody. It's just a matter of turning over enough rocks to find it. But it's an awesome project. And I mean, you're doing what the president is doing.
Right.
You know, the Obamas have a garden in there in the White House, and I think it's an awesome thing. The school should do it, and the kids would learn it.
And I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere on that school property there's got to be some land where you can start composting and bringing in dirt and
even building containers.
Right.
Yeah. It sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Naomi, so much for being with us. Becky in Georgia, your question now, please, for the economy days.
Hey there. Okay, question is, I've gardened off and on for years, and I'm about to get back into it. But they were talking a while ago about, you know, blueberries, washing them, putting a little vinegar, popping them in the freezer. But now the thing is, how do you keep things from getting the little ice crystals and stuff in there and kind of freezer burning?
In our grocery book, we talk about how to freeze things, and there's kind of a couple of rules that we use. Number one is you take out as much air as possible. Number two, you make them as dry as possible, and you store them with less oxygen in it.
Well, the other thing is to also make sure that you're using them in a timely manner and keep them in a freezer that is not a frost-free freezer. Because a frost-free freezer tends to dry out food quicker. We have a chest freezer where we put stuff for long-term freezer storage. And, you know, there's zippered bags. There's different thicknesses of those zippered bags. Make sure when you're going to freeze something for a long time, you get the thickest freezer stuff or even buy one of those
vacuum sealers.
But our newest book, Cut Your Grocery Bill in Half, does talk about, it's got a whole chapter on freezing and storing.
And a whole chapter on gardening. So that'd be the place to start. Get the air out, get the water out, and store it.
And because you are America's cheapest family, let the record reflect, you did not pay retail for the freezer. Am I right?
That is exactly correct, Janet.
And you know, in the book, we tell people how we buy our appliances, and we buy them inexpensively by looking on Craigslist and looking in classified ads, and we look for somebody who has the original receipt, the original owner, 2 to 3 years old, maybe 5 years old.
Yep.
And you'll find a deal.
Our book talks about how to actually buy a used one without getting burned. But, Janet, our deep freeze that we have, we actually got it new, but we got it severely discounted because it was at Montgomery Ward's and they were going out of business. So I think we got it 40% off.
Yeah, for $400.
Wow. Wow,
yeah.
Such
and
a bargain hunter. I'm telling you, I'm very impressed. Because you didn't just accidentally get that title. You had to earn the title, America's Cheapest Family. Lisa, you're in Michigan. You have been oh so patient. I welcome you into this conversation. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I just wanted to share that I started the community that I'm going to be growing with are kids. And you talk about kids and science. We started a farm-to-market youth project where we're going to be learning science in the garden, and then we're going to take what we grow, we're going to sell at the farmer's market. So we're going to be learning business principles and scientific principles, and we're going to interact with the community, and we're going to build our community and character with the kids. And we're going to also take any of our extra vegetables and such, and we're going to donate them to wherever the kids want to donate them. And so there's this full circle concept where we're community building and there's character building and giving back to the community and learning together and acquiring skills to create the next generation farmers, since
Lisa,
farmers are disappearing.
Lisa, it sounds awesome, and I wish more parents in America had time to do what you're doing, but that is completely right on, and there's no way that you can sow all that good seed and reap anything bad.
And I thank you, Lisa, so much for being with us. And my apologies to the rest of you online. I'm sorry we couldn't get to your question, but I am thrilled that so many of you wanted to talk about gardening. Now, you know that there's more advice from what you heard this hour, right? So may I draw you to my website, inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. I want you to take a good look at Stephen and Annette. Their picture is right there. And then click on through, and you can get to their website, which has all kinds of great bits of advice as well. And remember, they've written some wonderful books that will help you as well. And you can learn more about that by going to their website. So my heartfelt thanks for a great and profitable hour on, yes, this federal tax day. And now we'll learn how to stretch our dollars, won't we? So my thanks to Stephen and Ed Economy Days and to you, friends. And I guess I'll see you in the garden. See you next time.
But now I learned some money management technique. And I can save enough to buy some real cool stuff. And I made my little fortune, so to speak. I'd only $7.50 once a week. That's my allowance. $7.50 once a week. I balanced my budget.
Hello, friend. This is Janet Parshall. There's just one more thing I want to talk about before we go. Every day we try to take a look at the stories and the issues that are being debated in the public forum and look at them through the lens of God's Word. That's because we think it's important that you're informed about what's going on in the world. But we try to go a step further. Our goal is to help you know how you can react to these stories as a child of God. In the Market is brought to you every day at this time with the help of some pretty dedicated people, listeners, just like you. Some support us by listening, others tell their friends about the program, and there are some who pray for our staff regularly. We're so grateful to each and every one of you. May I please make just one more suggestion? Would you consider supporting us financially? Your gift will help Moody Radio provide programming like In the Market to this station without charge. To send your gift, go to our website at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. That's inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org and click on the support button. Or you can learn more at 1-800-DL-MOODY. And thanks again for listening.